वंशकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितरं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Now we will begin chapter 30. There are 31 chapters in this fourth canto. This is the next to last chapter. These two chapters, 30 and 31, discuss the pratetas. The pratetas were described in chapter 24. Prior to that, the Bhagavatam discussed for quite a few chapters the pastimes of Prithumaraj. And then after Prithumaraj left this world, he left the kingdom, or before he left this world actually, when he went to the forest, when he perceived himself getting older, he went to the forest to end his life focusing solely upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because ultimately we have so many duties to perform in this life and so many responsibilities. But this is our greatest responsibility, to make spiritual advancement. In that sense, our greatest responsibility is not to others, but it is to ourselves. And even a still more pointed sense, our responsibility is to Krishna in that way, because by the grace of God we attain a human life, a human birth. We're eternal souls, and due to our activities for countless lives, we have unlimited karma. So it's not automatic that the soul is born within a human body. Human body is a gift in that sense of Krishna's. And therefore, in reciprocation with Krishna, we take our life very responsibly to make proper use of our human life. So it is a reciprocation with Krishna's kindness in that sense too. In any case, when Prithumaraj left for the forest, he left the kingdom in the charge of his son, who had two names, Antadanya and Vishwan something. And this son of his, he passed the kingdom on to his son and his son, like that, until it came to the father of Pachini Barishad. Then Pachini Barishad took over the kingdom, and he began to perform many, many, many sacrifices. Many, many fruitive sacrifices. He actually didn't understand the purpose of life, nor did he understand the actual purpose of making sacrifices. What he thought was the purpose of it all was to attain so much piety that practically speaking, you can enjoy forever. Because we don't enjoy or suffer in this world just based on our desire and our hard work. But it is based on our fortune. Because we see so many people work hard, but not everyone becomes wealthy. And sometimes money just drops into somebody's hand and suddenly they become millionaires or even billionaires without much work at all. Or someone's even born into a wealthy family. So it's not just one's work, but there's the element of fortune in there. And that fortune means the piety that one has accumulated from previous activities, previous lives. So Pachini Barishad began to perform sacrifice after sacrifice, Vedic sacrifices, karmakandiya sacrifices, to accumulate his material piety, thinking that he could enjoy heavenly delight, subtle material pleasure. So it described this, in the Bhagavatam, in the beginning of the 24th chapter. And then it described how his sons, when he wanted them to prepare for married life, to take up responsible life in the kingdom, and eventually to take over the kingdom, he sent them to perform austerities, to harden their character, to make it strong, because to rule the world, to perform something responsibly, not to be whimsical, not to be sold out continually by material allurements that destroy one's character, that destroy one's integrity, because that's what we see that happens to one politician after the next. They're in office, and then some money gets offered to them, and then they take a bribe, and they lose their character, they lose their integrity, they gain some money, but they only really gain, if not infamy in this life, when they get caught. But they just compromise themselves. And one can't be happy, actually, if one compromises one's beliefs. And to live according to one's beliefs is called integrity of character. And if one has high character, that means his beliefs are high, and his activities are also high. And he can't be, he's strongly fixed in his principles, he refuses to break them. There's nothing in the world can offer him that can cause him to break his principles. That's a person of character. And to rule, to be in a position of king, one needs such strong character, bravery, etc. So many fine qualities, exalted qualities are needed. So to make one's mind strong enough to resist the petty temptations that will come to one so that they'd be able to do the right thing, he sent them to perform austerities. So we heard that they went to perform austerities, and in the chapter 24 describes that when they went to perform austerities, they came in touch with Lord Shiva, who was appreciated their Vaishnava nature, which hadn't come out yet, but he knew it was there. He appreciated their submissiveness to the order of their father. And he appreciated that they were going to perform austerities, so therefore he instructed them, and he sang one song, a prayer that had several parts. And in those he told them, by offering obeisances to the powerful Lord, and by explaining the Lord's position, he explained what is really to be gained in this world, and that is the association of devotees. And in that association, hearing. So the prayers of Lord Shiva went on, and then Lord Shiva instructed the Prachetas to meditate upon this as they perform their austerities. Because, again, it's the mind that's everything. Because we could be performing some devotional service or some austerities, and we could be thinking just horrible things. When is this going to be over? Or worse, we could be thinking very easily, how much more do I have left of this? If one's mind is in that mood, what doesn't actually penetrate into the actual benefit of the austerity. Because when one performs an austerity or any type of devotional service, it's not just service, it's seva, or devotional service. The prime word, the key word is devotional. And the devotion, the bodily activity, is an expression of the devotion. Of course, when we don't have devotion, we perform the external activities because that will help evoke that devotion. But the point is that the devotion, the service, the offering to Krishna should be made through one austerity or another, or the service that we're doing. So much of that is a product of what the mind, what the mind is like. So the Lord Shiva instructed them, after teaching them this song, these set of prayers, he instructed them to meditate upon the Lord through these prayers when they perform their austerity. And then he left, and the Pachetas went inside water to perform austerity. And we'll hear about that. And they performed austerities for 10,000 years. Now, what we're going to pick up in the story now is what happened after they performed their austerities for so many years. And what happened in between this, that we've been hearing about in chapters 25 through 29, is Narada went to the father of the Pachetas, and he decided to be kind to him and benedict him with some actual understanding of what the purpose of sacrifice was for. So we heard about that, and through Narada's telling Pachini Bharishit the story of King Puranjana in several chapters, and then finally two more. There's the story about the deer in the garden with the female deer while the tiger and the hunter are stalking them. And then finally he asks, Puchini Bharishad asks the question of Narada, if one performs activities in one life and then the body dies, then what is it that carries on the results, the karma for those activities? If the body which performed the activities dies, what carries it so that you enjoy or suffer in the next life? So though in response to that, Pachini Bharishad heard from Narada very, very wonderful and detailed philosophy about the subtle body and how important the state of the subtle body is. Practically, our karma sits inside the subtle body in the form of desires. And he explained how one can tell what someone's past life was by how one is acting in this life. First he said that you can tell someone's mind by their actions in this life, and you can tell someone's past lives by their mind, because their mind in this life is a product of their activities from previous lives and their mind from previous lives. So then after hearing this, Prachini Bharishad left home immediately without even waiting for his sons to return. And now we're hearing what happened to the sons in chapter 30, picking up the pastime there. So, text 1. So Vidura inquires from Maitreya, Ye Traya Bhita Brahman Sutta Prachini Bharishad Te Rudra Gitena Harim Siddhim Apu Patosyakam. So Vidura Uvacha. So after hearing how Prachini Bharishad left home, then Vidura asked further, you previously spoke about, O Brahmana, you previously spoke about Prachini Bharishad Sutta, the sons of Prachini Bharishad, that's the Pachetas. Te, all of them, Rudra Gitena, by the song composed by Lord Shiva, by taking shelter of this Rudra Gita, or the song of Lord Shiva, Harim Siddhim, the Lord, Hari, Siddhim, they achieve success in attaining Lord Hari. How? Pratosha come, having satisfied him. What did they actually achieve by satisfying the Lord by chanting this prayer? So Prabhupada's translation. Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachini Bharhi and informed me that they satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. Actually, this song composed by Lord Shiva wasn't just composed by Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma passed it on to all the sons who were to create progeny. So then he asked, what did they achieve? What did the Pachetas achieve? We'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport. In the beginning, Maitreya Muni narrated the activities of the sons of Prachini Barhi. These sons went beside a great lake, which was like an ocean. And fortunately, finding Lord Shiva, they learned how to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting the songs composed by Lord Shiva. Now their father's attachment for fruitive activities was disapproved by Narada, who therefore kindly instructed Prachini Bhaiyashat by telling him the allegorical story of Paranjan. Now Vidura again wanted to hear about Prachini Bhaiyashat's sons, and he was especially inquisitive to know what they achieved by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Bahaspatya, Maitreya Muni, what did the sons of King Bahirshat, known as the Prachetas, obtain after meeting Lord Shiva, who was very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of liberation? Certainly they were transferred to the spiritual world, because that is the main goal of pleasing the Lord, is that one goes to the Lord, one goes to the spiritual world. That is actually the ultimate result. But he said, certainly that occurred, they went to the spiritual world. But apart from that, what did they obtain in the material world? Either in this life or in other lives. Because it's interesting, of course, their father, Prachini Bhaiyashat, had performed so many sacrifices. What? To gain attainments in this life and in future lives. So he wants to know, Vidura is inquiring, well, these Prachetas didn't perform these type of fruitive activities. What did they obtain, though? Because one may think that if I become a devotee and fully devoted to Krishna, maybe I'll go back to Godhead, but oh, I really have to suffer in this life and until I go back to Godhead. And no one, of course, looks forward to suffering. So what did he obtain? Okay, he's going back to Godhead, but what did the Prachetas obtain even in this life or in future lives? So Maitreya began his reply. The sons of King Prachini Bhaiyashat, so he's going to explain what happened to them, known as the Prachetas, underwent severe austerities within the seawater to carry out the order of their father. By chanting and repeating the mantras given by Lord Shiva, they were able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, in this section, in this chapter, there's some quite interesting purports. Here is Prabhupada's purport. We'll read about half of that. A little less, more than half. One can offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. But if one repeats the prayers offered by great devotees like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, or if one follows in the footsteps of great personalities, one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. Why? One can pray in one's own way, but why is it easier? And one actually will pray in one's own way, but why is it easier, and what is the special potency and following, using the prayers or composed by the great personalities, the great acharyas?
Because those personalities have the quality of heart to make praise, greatly praise you.
Yes. So if we just repeat them, then?
It's said to develop that quality of heart.
Well, that's the point.
Sentiments will gradually come to our heart.
So that's what we want, to enter into the mood that they have entered into, because by their prayers, by entering into that particular mood, then what happens? We see the result that they obtained because the Lord was pleased with them. So to please the Lord, we want to enter into that mood. That's the point. So that means that it's not, again, one can do it on many, many different levels. One can just mechanically, rotely recite the prayers, which is good. But what is really required is to enter deeply into the mood, the bhava. So that's what we look for in the prayers. What is the actual bhava, the mood? So we too, if we are fortunate, can enter into that. So the sons of King Prachinibhayashat, known as the Prachetas, underwent severe austerities within the seawater to carry out the order of their father. By chanting and repeating the mantras given by Lord Shiva, they were able to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one can offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, but if one repeats the prayers offered by great devotees like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, or if one follows in the footsteps of great personalities, one can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. But it's not easy to enter into the mood of the prayers. That's the hard part. Because that means that we have to cease being superficial. That's the hard part. For instance, we sometimes chant this mantra of Brahma Samhita. Cintamani prakara sadmasuka upabriksha laksha vrteshu surabhi abhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra satasam brahma sevyamanam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires. In abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees, desire trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. Because this prayer was offered by Lord Brahma, we follow him by reciting this prayer. That is the easiest way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The pure devotee never attempts to reach the Supreme Lord directly. The most important way to worship the Lord is to go through the disciplic succession of devotees. Again, this isn't a superficial thing. Prabhupada's making the same point, really, that he's making with the prayers. Is that we don't, with our mood, we don't approach the Lord. We have to learn the proper mood by entering into the mood of the prayers given by the great devotees and by enter into the mood of the disciplic succession. The most important way to worship the Lord is to go through the disciplic, adopt their mood of worship. The prayers offered by Lord Shiva to the Supreme Personality of Godhead were thus repeated by the Prachetas, but not just blindly and rotely, who were thus very successful in pleasing the Supreme Lord. Now, how long did they practice austerities for? How long did they chant these prayers for? At the end of 10,000 years of severe austerities performed by the Prachetas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to reward their austerities, because it was something done to please him, so he accepted it. He appeared before them in his very pleasing form. This appealed to the Prachetas and satisfied the labor of their austerities. There's another interesting point in Prabhupada's purport, a little bit from the beginning. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appreciated the austerities undergone by the Prachetas, and he finally appeared before them in a pleasing form. Thus they all became satisfied and forgot the austerities they underwent, because austerities are by definition, they're austere. Austere by definition means difficult. Means that one doesn't do just what one feels like doing, one performs. Because if you do anything day after day after day after day, it becomes an austerity. And what's going to happen when one performs austerities is the mind starts rebelling. The mind starts saying, no, I don't want to do it. Especially if one has a wild mind, as we are brought up in this Kali Yuga to have. So the austerity is to neglect the mind and continue to act for the pleasure of Krishna. So he appeared before them in a pleasing form, and they became satisfied and forgot the austerities they underwent. Like if one fasts on Nirjala Ekadasi or any Ekadasi, and it's difficult in the mind, it's hard, but one does it, and then when one gets the result of his, when it's over and he takes prasadam, he forgets about the difficulties that he underwent. So they became satisfied and forgot the austerities they underwent. In the material world, if one is successful after hard labor, he is very pleased. Similarly, the devotee forgets all his labors and austerities as soon as he contacts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Dhruva Maharaj was only a 5-year-old boy, he underwent severe austerities by simply eating dry foliage, leaves, drinking only water and taking no food. In this way, after 6 months, he was able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. When he saw the Lord, he forgot all his austerities and said, Swamin kritartoasmi, my dear Lord, I am very pleased. Of course, these austerities were performed in the Satyuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Treta Yuga, but not in this age of Kali. In this Kali Yuga, one can attain the same results simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because of this, the people of this age are fallen, the Lord is kind enough to give them the easiest method. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, one can attain the same results. However, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points out, we are so unfortunate that we are not even attracted to chanting the Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And instead of being attracted to the Mahamantra, what are we attracted to? Yeah, that's one of the... What is the glory of Gramya Katha? it's something for the mind to dwell on as anything but Krishna for the materialistic mind. So Gramya Katha is an example. But there's unlimited things we become attracted to, the mind becomes attracted to. But in any case, the Vachetas satisfied the Lord, and the Lord appeared before them. What did he look like? In his pleasing form, because his form was pleasing. The personality of Godhead appearing on the shoulder of Garuda, he seemed like a cloud resting on the summit of a mountain known as Meru. The transcendental body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was covered by attractive yellow garments, and his neck was decorated with a jewel known as Kastuba Mani. The bodily effulgence of the Lord dissipated all the darkness of the universe. The Lord's face was very beautiful, and his head was decorated with a shining helmet and golden ornaments. The helmet was dazzling and was very beautifully situated on his head. The Lord had 8 arms, which each held a particular weapon. And our acharyas say the weapons were the club, disc, conch, and lotus, were the typical 4, and then the arrow, bow, trident, and a snake. The Lord was surrounded by demigods, great sages, and other devotees. He didn't come alone. He came like a king, doesn't go places alone. The Lord came, demigods, sages, and other associates, and they were all engaged in his service. Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, glorified the Lord with the Vedic hymns by flapping his wings. Garuda appeared to be inhabitant of the planet known as Kinara Loka. The Kinaras, Prabhupada explains in the purport, they are expert in singing the glories of the Lord, and they have human, they'll have human form, but they have like wing, they have wings. Seems like some sort of angels of sort. So Garuda appeared like them. Around the neck of the personality of Godhead hung a flower garland that reached to his knees. His 8 stout and elongated arms were decorated with that garland, which challenged the beauty of the goddess of fortune. With a merciful glance and a voice like thunder. What is a voice like thunder? What does thunder sound like? Like this? Very deep.
Powerful.
Accompanied by shining white feet. Like lightning.
Wow. Even the acharyas didn't penetrate that deeply. So, and what is a, what with a merciful glance? What is a merciful glance? Have you ever seen a merciful glance? Have you? Just imagine. Have you ever seen a merciful glance? Yeah. You? No! Poor Nittai. Everyone should glance mercifully at Nittai. Well, it's great. It's an the glance is an expression of loving affection from the heart. So much is portrayed through the glance. When someone's, have you ever seen an angry glance? That, yeah, everyone recognizes that. Even Nittai, yes? Yeah. From who, Nittai? Me? No. His mother. But he's also seen a compassionate glance of his mother. So this is the Lord's pleasing feature with a merciful glance and a voice like thunder. The Lord addressed the sons of King Pratinibharishat, who were very much surrendered unto Him. So, from text 8 to... the Lord will speak to them. My dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased. What is he pleased by? By the friendly relationships amongst you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I am so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction of me. So what was he pleased with?
Affectionate feelings.
Yeah, friendly relationships. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. So they had a common center. That common center was devotional service. And what does devotional service mean? It means acting for the pleasure of Krishna. So Krishna's pleasure was all their center. And they were cooperative and friendly because of that. I'm so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. So that was the result. Now you may ask a benediction from me. And what is the Lord capable of giving? Anything. Just imagine. If a billionaire said, whatever you want, I'll give you. What would we ask for? Don't say something silly.
My profession.
Oh, that's very nice. Because imagine how foolish we'd be if we'd asked for a new pair of glasses or something like that. Or a new bicycle. Because he's capable of giving so much. So if you'd have to do something to have a billionaire ask you, whatever you want, I'll give you. You have to, must have done something very wonderful to please him. So the Lord is so pleased. And what again, what's it by? Their friendship, friendly dealings, cooperative dealings. Centered around the pleasure of the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Since the sons of King Pratinibharishat were all united in Krishna consciousness, the Lord was very pleased with them. Each and every one of the sons of King Prachinibharishat was an individual soul, but they were united in offering transcendental service to the Lord. The unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In other words, they didn't become one soul. They became one in spirit. And that was real big oneness. Oneness with diversity. So that is real unity. Devotion, based on devotion, Krishna's pleasure. In the material world, the unity of individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord or rendering service to the Lord is real unity. In the material world, such unity is not possible. Even though people may officially unite, they all have different interests. In the United Nations, for instance, all the nations have their particular national ambitions. And consequently, they cannot be united. Disunity between individual souls is so strong within the material world that even in a society of Krishna consciousness, members sometimes appear disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning towards material things. So Prabhupada is saying, here's one cause of disunity that even comes into the Krishna consciousness movement, whose purpose is to please Krishna. So theoretically, everything should be just all sweet and cooperation and within the Krishna consciousness movement, because Prabhupada and Krishna are the center, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the great acharyas. But no, it doesn't always happen in such a romantic or idealistic way as one who stays around for even a short time understands. Now, what is the cause that Prabhupada is pointing to here? It says different opinions, two things. They appear disunited. Appear disunited means they're not actually disunited, but they appear to be disunited due to their having different opinions and leaning towards material things. So the leaning towards material things will lead to true disunity, not just the appearance of disunity. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two opinions. There is only one goal. So the two opinions cannot be about what the goal is. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to one's best ability. If there is some disagreement over service, so there can be different opinions and disagreements over service, such disagreement is to be taken as spiritual. That's just the expression of one's individuality. So to say that every disagreement is caused by just Maya is not actually accurate, because the disagreements can be caused by different opinions of how Krishna can be pleased. But the disagreements caused by either Krishna not being the center and Krishna's pleasure not being the center, or towards the leaning towards materialism, that can be said to be true disunity. But the seeming disunity caused by difference of opinions how to please Krishna, that is not actually disunity, because the goal is the same, and that type of disunity can be overcome. The external disunity that may come from that can be overcome. Those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited in any circumstances, disunited over this goal of pleasing Krishna. This makes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very happy and willing to award all kinds of benediction to his devotees, as indicated in this verse. We can see that the Lord is immediately prepared to award all benedictions to the son of King Prachinibharishat. So, before Prabhupada left, there was a famous story that that before he left this world, some of the devotees asked Prabhupada if they should tell all the devotees that it was possibly the last time they were going to see Prabhupada. And then the devotees said to Prabhupada, they'll all come because they love you, Prabhupada. And what was Prabhupada's reply?
Tasted how much they love me.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Is in other words the cooperation, and that can be misused too. That cooperation means that you have to do what I say because then that's cooperation. I have a position, and we should all cooperate. Do what I say. But that's not a very practical level of the only way cooperation goes. In other words, cooperation means that somehow or another, let's cooperate, keep our unity to serve Prabhupada. And that is the greatest of austerities. Why? Because in Kali Yuga, the hardest thing is cooperating. Why? Because everyone has their own opinion. And one's love and affiliations and commitments tend to be quite superficial. Why? Because we tend to be quite superficial and not at all dutiful, and we tend to be quite whimsical. Well, I don't feel like it today, or you know, it's too hard, or like that. So somehow or another, Prabhupada made the point that we should try, and the responsibility rests on everyone to try to cooperate. That means everyone has to do some bending and compromising of what I feel for the, because if everyone thinks that I know everything and should be like this and everyone should simply cooperate with me because I'm the one who knows everything and this is the right way, well, then we'll find that it'll be very lonely. We'll be forced having to cooperate basically with ourselves only, because everyone else, very few people will be able to do that. So it takes some compromise, not on the principle of unity, which is that Krishna is to be pleased, but on how that's applied. It takes some practical working out. So this is it's a famous purport, and it's also a very deep one, and it's quite tempted to stop here and ask people to say what they want about it. But I don't think I'm going to, despite the temptation, because I was supposed to get up to text 20 and I'm not even going to come close. I'll go on for a few more minutes. So that's the first thing the Lord said. Now, just see how powerful the potatoes became like this. Listen to what he says now. Those who remember you every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. So the potatoes were so powerful that just simply by remembering them, one becomes friendly with brothers and other living entities. Those who will offer me the prayers composed by Lord Shiva, both in the morning and in the evening, will be given benedictions by me. In this way, they can both fulfill their desires and attain good intelligence. Because you have with pleasure accepted within your hearts the order of your Father, with pleasure accepting, not, all right, I'll do it. Not that mood, but you have asked me. Yes, I'm very happy to please you. Like Lord Ram immediately went to the forest to please his father. Yes, immediately, no grudge. Such character these people had. So instead of hearing about people with no character, as we tend to do with the Gramya Gita, and then we also develop no character, but we should hear about and make these quality of people our heroes. Because you have with pleasure accepted within your hearts the orders of your father and have executed those orders very faithfully, your attractive qualities will be celebrated all over the world. So he's now going to give them some blessings. He's asked them, you can ask me whatever you want, but now he's going to tell them what will happen. Some blessings. You will have a nice son who will be no way inferior to Lord Brahma. Consequently, he will be very famous all over the universe, and the sons and grandsons generated by him will fill the three worlds. Now, who remembers the very beginning of the... What was at the beginning of the first of this fourth canto? What pastime is there? Yeah, you're looking. That's not... I said, who remembers? I said, not who can peek. Huh? Prithumaraj, yes. But before Prithumaraj was Dhruvamaraj, and before Dhruvamaraj was Daksha. So Daksha actually died. And he took his... He's the one being referred to here. Because he takes his birth as their son.
He died.
It'll be explained later in the beginning of the end of this chapter, beginning of next chapter. Yes, he did. It doesn't explain much of the details about it. Sons of King Pachinibharisa, Sadi girl named Pramlochana. So he's telling the history of who he's going to marry that will produce this nice son. The heavenly society girl named Pramlochana kept the lotus-eyed daughter of Kandu in the care of the forest trees. Now, that sounds quite far out. Then she went back to the heavenly planets. This daughter was born by the coupling of the apsara named Pramlochana with the sage Kandu. So what happened was Indra... Kandu, the sage Kandu was performing austerities and Indra became fearful again, as he did with Prithumaraj, and he sent down the apsaras, the courtesans of the heavenly planet, to break his vows of austerity. So she did, and the result was, her name was Pramlocha, and the result was a very beautiful daughter named Marisha. And then Pramlochana went back to the heavenly planets, and lo and behold, who took care of the child? She left the child in the care of the trees. Now, trees aren't well known for their kind care of their children. They sort of just let everyone grow up on their own, it seems. But anyway, so it describes something else that happened. Thereafter, the child who was left to the care of the trees began to cry in hunger, because obviously didn't have any roots. At that time, the king of the forest, namely the king of the moon planet, out of compassion placed his finger which poured forth nectar within the child's mouth. Thus the child was raised by the mercy of the king of the moon. Since all of you are very much obedient to my order, not only are they obedient to the father's order, but also to the Lord's order, I ask you to immediately marry that girl who is so well qualified with beauty and good qualities, according to the order of your father, create progeny through her. So this was the father's desire, that they get married, and also the Lord's, so that they can rule. You brothers are all of the same nature, being devotees and obedient sons of your father. Similarly, that girl is also of the same type and is dedicated to all of you. Thus both the girl and you, the sons of Pachinibharisat, are on the same platform, being united on a common principle. So it's quite awkward in one sense that there were 10 of them and one of her, and she was going to marry all of them. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that she was able to do this by the blessings of the Lord. And then he says, with the blessings of the Lord, all things are possible. Text 17. The Lord then blessed all the Pachetas, saying, my dear princes, by my mercy, you can enjoy all the facilities of this world as well as the heavenly world. So remember that point about the question Vidura asked is, what would they obtain? They would go back to Godhead, but what would they obtain in this life and in future lives? Because again, Prachini Bharishat was not performing devotional service, performing sacrifices to get material happiness. But look what they had attained just by pleasing the Lord. All pleasure facilities of this world as well as the heavenly world. Indeed, you can enjoy all of them without hindrance, with full strength for 1,000,000 celestial years. So this came through their rendering of full devotional service. Thereafter, so what will happen after all the enjoyment? Thereafter you will develop unadulterated, what does unadulterated mean? Pure, with no adulteration, nothing added. Unadulterated devotional service, pure devotional service unto me. You will develop that and be freed from all material contamination. At that time, being completely unattached to material enjoyment in the so-called heavenly planets as well as the hellish planets, you will return back home, back to Godhead. So the next two purports I had, I think we should read. They're very nice. And we don't have time now, so we'll stop here. So text 18 will begin tomorrow. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
The comment about this agreement about service being spiritual, participation is spiritual, and this simple little entreaty, what is meant by spiritual?
Pure.
So that
not material.
Normally, in an argument, then both sides think that the other side is wrong. That's the whole basis of the disagreement. Is that I'm right, and the other person's wrong. But in spiritual means Satchitananda, and it's full of consciousness. So how can the other side be wrong?
Yeah. What?
If spiritual means Satchitananda. Is that one that's a definition of spiritual?
Well, that's bringing in a point that maybe doesn't exactly. Spiritual, yeah, so that's the question. Spiritual means that it's an act done to please Krishna. It's not motivated selfishly. It's not motivated by the selfish desire of enjoyment. There's no false ego. So spiritual means without false ego, something enacted with real ego, through the real identity, which means for the pleasure of Krishna. That is called Bhagavad Dharma, and that's spiritual, a spiritual act. So although I may have, theoretically, I may have a pure motivation to want to serve Krishna in a particular way, and you may have a pure motivation to serve Krishna in a different way, but specific way. So both of them could be really Krishna-centered and therefore spiritual, but they may be different from each other. Like Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda, when it's time for the cow herding, their spiritual idea is that Krishna stay home. And the cowherd boys at the same time have the spiritual idea, both for Krishna's pleasure, they want him to stay home so they can feed him and take care of him. And the cowherd boys want to leave the parents behind as quickly as possible so that they can play with him, because they know that's what Krishna wants. And the gopis said yes, they have a different spiritual idea. Yes, they should go out, but we want to be with him. So all of them can't go on at the same time, yet they're all spiritual and pure. So it's up to Krishna how he wants to reconcile the different, these different ones.
So from that point of view, that we may not have that understanding, and our motives may not be pure, and we're still attempting to purify and so on.
Yes.
So then if we would see senior, advanced Krishna conscious devotees in a disagreement, then how would we know, or how could we deal with that?
Well, the best advice is that we should basically just mind our own business. And that's actually the advice that's given. Don't take sides. But basically, just figure out if it's our duty, we deal with it. If it's, you know, usually we're interested in it for Gramyakata reasons, just, you know, selfish, petty, you know, mundane reasons. We just mind our own business and see how we can please Krishna. And that would be pleasing to Krishna, probably. That takes a lot of controlling of the mind, though, doesn't it? You know, to do what you're supposed to do. I remember that one where now they've made a business program, computer program, called MYOB. But I remember that in my family, we used to say that to each other, MYOB, and put an E at the end. It stood for everyone. Mind your own business, everyone. Yeah. You have to know what your duty is, actually. But instead of saying it to everyone else, we should say it to ourselves. I should mind my own business. So if it's my business, I deal with it. If it's not, I don't. Is that all right? Does that satisfy you, Divi?
It seems that the thrust of modern technology, though, is that everybody should be aware of everything that's going on.
And have an opinion about everything.
Opinion and should know about everything going on.
Well, I think.
The whole world, not only in your principality, but the whole world, because it's all supposed to affect us in such a way.
And the result is chaos. A non-cooperation. Well, I think this, and I think this, about this, and I, everyone. Yeah, and information overload. What were you going to say? Did you want to ask something else?
Or your explanation about the spiritual nature of disagreements over service means that really we couldn't. What do we do in the meantime? Because I certainly can't see that. I can't even.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We shouldn't judge others' motives unless it's our duty, specific duty to do that.
So our link to the pure motive is our link to our duty.
We should try to understand what our own duty is. What's my service? And we should try to do that as an offering to Krishna. And let the world do what it's going to do. That's my understanding. I can't see any other way to stop from going crazy in life. Because if you try to make everyone see things the way you want it to be seen, you'll drive everyone else crazy. Or if you try to harmonize everyone and make everyone fully cooperate, unless it's your particular service, that also doesn't work. What do you think?
Even our Brahma couldn't do
it. In the Sunday piece, I'm sorry to interrupt. We're talking about tolerance. And most of the disagreement comes from lack of tolerance or lack of even the ability to listen to someone else's point of view.
Well, but yes, and yeah, which is a skill, not yes.
Does that have anything to do with it in
the sense? Yeah, I think it's good. I think with this type of a mood, we'll develop a little more humility. And when you have a little more humility, if you take the attitude that you said, my motives aren't pure, So then that naturally should make you aware of your impurity. So that naturally brings humility. And if you're humble, you may have an opinion, but you don't think it's the absolute truth descended and incarnate in your voice. So therefore you say it as an opinion, as opposed to this is what the truth is. And by being in that mood, and that means you listen to others as well.
The organization of the society, there's an hierarchical structure with these authority that we...
Yeah, so we have a relationship to that. Yes.
But then when does it become...
So everyone should know what their duty is, also in relationship to that. If you're the temple president, and then you have one duty. If you're not, you have another duty. And everyone should mostly concern themselves about what their own duty is, and what happens nowadays is everyone concerns themselves mostly what everyone else's duty is.
This is really what my point is that it just seems that the entire organization, Varnashrama and everything, depends on people doing their duty, but other conditions fall, so naturally we tend to want to check shortcuts. So then if we're all minding our own business, then who checks on who? Or how does
it all there's stay? People whose duty is to check on others.
Okay.
I didn't really mean mind your own business, I meant mind your own duty. That's probably more appropriate, even though I did say mind your own business. Being clever. But mind your own business means mind your own duty. So there are people whose duty is to care for others and make sure that others are doing their duty. So, but that doesn't, because there are people who have that as a duty, doesn't mean that it's everyone's duty. So everyone should know what their duty is. So then the next question is, well, how do I know what my duty is? But if I tell you that, you might not come tomorrow.
On the other side, a question you could raise is, what do you do if you see somebody whose duty is to do something and as far as you can see they're not doing it? Is it your duty to say anything?
Well, no. Yes.
I guess...
Everyone's duty is, if you see someone doing something that's wrong, then it is your duty to say something. But how and when and to who is also part of your duty. Yes?
In a lot of those places, I'm trusting friendship. You can't tell someone something if you don't have...
If you don't have a personal relationship, then you have no relationship in the hierarchical order either. Because sometimes you don't have a personal relationship, but you have a hierarchical relationship according to the hierarchy, the structure, and... Yeah, that's both points, I think. I mean, it doesn't mean that everything just descends to chaos if people mind their own duty.
Yeah? It doesn't mean that you have to watch things that you see going on incorrectly and be quiet.
No, it means you shouldn't. Yeah, and then what happens if you do your duty, what you understand is your duty, you complain to the right people and bring it to the right people's attention and still nothing happens? That's, you know, and then nothing's going on. Then you have to see if you have any further duty. Yeah.
That happened to me in my devotee, Dharma Ramachandra, was just a little bit to, if you approach all the authorities, then you just have to, you've done the duty.
Yeah, you leave it to Krishna. That's generally, and sometimes there may be some extraordinary duty, like there's something called an extraordinary meeting or something, or emergency powers, and then maybe Krishna wants you to do something other than the standard, and then you really want to make sure it's Krishna who wants you to do it, not just the false ego just telling you to cause a revolution or something like that.
So it really means independent assessment of what's going on in one's own duty, rather than definitely not just a following attitude.
Definitely not a service attitude either. Service attitude. Serving attitude that's self-centered. So then it comes. Then the question comes again. Well, how do you know your duty? If you have no one in a superior position to you that you trust at all, more than you trust your own mind, you're in a difficult position. to get, at least get it confirmed, and Mahaprabhu says this to Sanatana Goswami, it is the nature of a sadhu to ask questions to confirm his realizations. So even a sadhu, even if he's right and he knows he's right, he still has to confirm. That's what Mahaprabhu said to Sanatana Goswami. Anyway, I find that these kind of things, the more they're discussed, the better, the healthier. And everyone, yeah. Discussed in, from the point of view of, you know, and really hearing what other people to say, because in doing it in that way, then you really come to a clearer group idea, and you know, a community, the strength of the community is made stronger in that way. Especially in these times that are so difficult in their own. Because when authority, Kali Yuga authority, doesn't act properly, and then everyone gets has the justification to not listening to authority anymore, and the result is chaos. So that's not a solution either, because authority has been not lived up to the expectations that we have, you know, in the world too. To see how people think of politicians. Clergymen, you know, in our own society too.
Leaders of countries.
Huh?
Leaders of countries.
Leaders of everything. So the alternative is no lead, no follower, everyone just go for it, and the result is insanity, basically increasing, geometrically increasing insanity. So that's not a solution either. But it's certainly the tendency, as you pointed out, everyone has, you know, you have to know everything about everyone else's business and have an opinion about everything. Yeah, and then everyone say their opinions at the same time.
That's also because everyone's fearful. Fearful of the person they're trusting is actually behind their back doing something that's going to hurt them.
Yeah, but ultimately, that's the issue. Ultimately, when we're trusting another, who are we actually trusting? That's really the point. It's like, even if one spiritual master is left, the spiritual master is a representative of Krishna. So when you accept the spiritual master, you accept the spiritual master because it's Krishna's system. So who are you actually trusting? That's the point. It's like trusting the bank teller. You know, the bank guarantees it. You know, you have your receipt, even if the bank teller proves to be dishonest. I think no one can hurt someone who trusts Krishna, and if they can digest all the things that are going to happen to them in life, because they'll find out that, you know, Krishna's there through everything. But it's not a cheaper and easy thing to have so much faith and trust in Krishna. Easy to say, but that means basically that you're ready to go back to Godhead, tatena kampam susumikshamano. But yet that is the philosophy, and therefore a devotee lives only in the mercy of the Lord, and therefore he alone can be free of anxiety in this world. So when you trust another, you trust Krishna. That's the trust of Krishna, that nothing can happen without Krishna's sanction. And there's your own karma too. Okay. See, the whole bhakti jay, Srimad Bhagavatam. Say, protect us, ki jay.